Few months. Hello, welcome to the Odds War Game. I'm your host, Rob. I'm joined by a man who needs no introduction, yet I'll do it anyway. Vincey V. Vincent, how are you? Vince, sorry. Are you well?
I'm well, buddy. I'm excited.
Good, me too. I always appreciate you getting up this early to come on and hang out with me in the chat.
I am not a morning person. I want that to be known. But for you, Rob, for you, I'm happy to do it.
Appreciated. Absolutely. I enjoyed the shout out. Thank you on Wednesday for the satire, although too long. I think Heywo also took a dig at me as well recently as well. He was like, too long, too much. I was like, okay, lads, I appreciate you. I'm sorry. I'm new to the comedy.
No, it was so very British. Like this unending dry satire that just went. Although, admittedly, if you hadn't gone on that long, we wouldn't have got the Mork's Mighty Mushroom bit with Nathan, which was a surprisingly cathartic payoff to it all. So there you go.
It was. It's hard, right? So, I mean, there's loads to ask about. Obviously, Vince is from Warhammer Weekly. I don't think I need to tell anyone that. But just in case I do, you can go and check him out on his channel. So just type in Warhammer Weekly. But I'm sure I don't need to. I think... there's loads to unpack, and you've done lots of shows on this already this week. There's all of the Vampire Lore, there's all the Warhammer Quest stuff, which I know you did a really big long video on, which, by the way, I really enjoyed. I love Tom's excitement.
He's so excited about it. He is, like, jazzed. That's mainly because, again, and so this is something that I think is actually that we often don't think about. You know, Tom has 4 kids, right? And a lot of people, especially in the AOS community, have kids. It's like a dad game. We've talked about that a lot, right? Mm. I've got to believe that the average Warhammer player is a 35-year-old male with 1 to 2 children. Like, that's the average Warhammer Age of Sigmar player, right?
Okay.
And he plays Warhammer Quest with his kids all the time, like the existing Silver Tower, and they love it. So this is a great chance for them to get back in. And let's be honest, the aesthetics and that we've seen so far, I am stoked for weird gravestone-carrying zombies and cool, thin vampire thralls, and whatever else is going to come out of that crazy Castlevania city. I'm ready for Halloween Town, the box set. Yeah.
Yeah, same. Me too. Like, but it was just fun watching you guys be excited. And also really for the Age of Sigmar community to, like, we'll touch on the FAQ for a second, but generally just for everyone to be excited, right? Like, it's been a pretty good couple of months, really, when it comes to, like, output from Games Workshop for us as a community, which is pretty exciting. Like, you know, 3 different armies or a Warhammer Quest and 2 armies, although I'm pretty certain the Gravelords is a whole army as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's been an exciting time, which has been super fun. Have you been enjoying the pace of it? Do you think that's fun?
Yeah, it's fine. And honestly, going to the 2-week releases, I got to say it's funny how much of a difference it made, right? Like, it feels much more relaxed. I'm not sure I super mind, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
So it's fine. Like, it's still good because overall, I want the high points throughout the year. Does that make sense? Like, what I ultimately want is I don't need something every week. Most weeks I end up ignoring whatever they're talking about anyways, right? Mm. What I want is the year to be full of cool stuff. And by full of cool stuff, I mean a couple new armies, the relaunch of an army or two, right? You know, some neat individual releases like Warhammer Quest, just like stuff I look at and go, I am excited for that. I would like to purchase that. I would like to paint that. I would like to play with that. Yeah. You get some of those going in a year, and I'm bang on, right?
Yeah, like, I would say it would be nice to see some, like, I quite like it when if they're aware of the differentials. Like, now you're going to be like, maybe jump on me for this, but like, I feel like the Snesh, and obviously because they do mirror each other, the Snesh and the Lumineth stuff, they obviously have a, like, a coexisting kind of, like, I don't know, they impart some sort of, like, design aesthetic to each other a tad, like, at least
100%,
you know. And so it doesn't feel like much the same, but it feels in the same town. Whereas, like, you know, the vampires felt like a very, very distinct departure from that kind of theme, which is nice. Like, so it's good that we're getting those differentials as well, I would say. Like, I'm super stoked for that. That's super fun. And then obviously we had the FAQ as well, which I'll ask you about as well. But I know you've already done the show on this, so like we're both caught up for the audiences on our thoughts. But have you had any thoughts since Wednesday, by any chance?
No, I mean, the FAQ is what it was, which was nothing. My one thing that I would say is I don't want to see any player-driven comp, and I know there's been some people discussing that, and I cannot explain how against that I am. That way lies damnation. So
you say that, yeah.
Yeah, and I stand behind that. Like, it's a lot to unpack as to why. But ultimately, like, it's just a bad road to go down because what it would ultimately do is relieve them of their pressure to make a quality game. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we shouldn't be doing that. Like, our direct pressure should be on them to produce the game that we all want to see. Mm-hmm. Right.
Even protesting at certain points, as much pressure as can be applied is my general philosophy.
Personal attacks aside, of course,
I'm more meant sign holding. As opposed to
sign holding is great. I love sign holding. My wife loved your sign holding, as you can see, as she sent you a new sign. She thought that was the funniest thing she'd ever seen when I showed it to her. So she was all about that.
Good.
I mean, it's just like I don't want that. The FAQ, ultimately, the shame of it is, again, ultimately, it was a communication failure because there could have been good reasons to not change the points. Right. Mm-hmm. Heyo, W. Soren coming in like a madman there with 5 gift subs for you.
Oh wow, you calling him out now for me, Vince? This is even easier.
There you go.
If all my gifts could.
He's a hero as always. W. Soren is, you know, I mean, look, the Texans. Man is he's a treasure. He's a treasure.
Is he a Texan oil baron?
I assume so. Yes. I assume that is the case. Yes.
Thank you to him. Massive love to him, and all love to everyone in Texas. Have you ever been down to Texas to play Warhammer with the guys?
I've never played I've been to Texas many, 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 many times. My company, one of their headquarters is in Texas, so I go to Texas quite frequently.
Oh, so, nice. I'm sure the guys down there would love to have you. They have that. They have like the Tri-City like rage-a-thon, and I don't know if they even travel north ever because they don't care.
It's a lot. By the way, it's a lot of geographic space. I mean, you could fit England in a whole lot of change inside Texas. I've played one game of Warhammer in Texas, which was 8th edition. When I did, so this is before I knew you, but before the launch of AOS,
already watching your stuff, by the way.
Okay, got it. Yes, we didn't know each other personally at that point.
No.
So 2 weeks before the launch of Age of Sigmar, I drove around the country, drove about 4,000, 5,000 miles, something like that, and played Warhammer. Brought all my armies with me, loaded them all up into a big SUV, and drove around the country about, like I said, about 4,500 miles over 8 days, and played like 10 or 12 games of Warhammer with everybody else who was doing Warhammer YouTubing. So like I drove over to Jersey and then to Virginia and then North Carolina and then Texas and then Louisiana and then up to Kentucky and then back up here. So
yeah, I was pretty mad for thank you to Paul Woodhams for joining the gang for the first time. Big love. Welcome to the team, and also thanks to everyone for joining us live in the chat. Sounds like Rob stalked Vince for a while before he betrayed his life. Back in the day, I would watch a lot of 8th edition Warhammer Fantasy Battle Reports.
Was
my kind of thing. And they were I never watched any long form, here's me rolling the dice. It was normally, almost always, pictorial.
It was the Once Bitten 360 style. He was the one who created it.
Yeah, and I loved it. I loved it. So I watched Once Bitten, I watched Lord Tremendous, I watched all those guys. I can't remember who played the Bretts all the time.
Center. Yeah, he was a big
right. So yeah, I watched all of those, Mr. Malorian, and it was like the quality was not low. That's not fair. Like, but it was of a different time, and it was just picture arrow, and it was super good, like super good. I don't think modern audiences would accept that, but like, that was still to me the very best experience for bat repping because I didn't watch loads of stuff happening. I just saw all the decision points, and so normally the bat reps would last and not even an hour.
Usually 20 to 30 minutes. That was your prime time, right? Yeah, I loved them. They were very bite-sized. And I will say they were very reminiscent of the battle reports I grew up in, or I grew up with, because, you know, when I started playing Warhammer in like 98, the battle reports we had were the things in White Dwarf, which were colored rectangles that would have little arrows on them and little shields to say what they were. And then they would like move around, you know, your halberdiers move forward. Boop. Okay, there we go. Got it. You know? Mm. And so it was just a much more visual version of that. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And I love those. That was fun. So anyway, that was actually some of my first integrations of you. Obviously I would have never searched your channel for painting tips because I'm an idiot.
Well, we could have had you. Could have had me so much earlier. Yeah. But yeah, that's the only time I played Warhammer in Texas. But I would love to play with the Texas guys. They're all great dudes. There's a really, really great scene down there, and there's a lot of really good dudes down there.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's on my list. I want to play some Warhammer and then probably ride a horse or I don't know, shoot a sign.
Oh, go yeah. No, well, you say that as a joke. But you should try to align with going to, like, you should try to end up in the Houston area during rodeo week. If you really want to experience Texas, go during rodeo week to Houston. I promise you it will be something, as an English person, it will be a very interesting experience for you.
I mean, I feel like Louis Theroux having a weird adventure. So, yeah, so I hear what you're saying about where we were was the community points. Interesting kind of like thing, which I touched on Monday's show, at the end of Monday's show, is obviously this game started as community points based, which
sure,
I think is
dead.
Like, and so like, I'm not talking about scenes in the means of production at all, but like it initially, and its growth and strength initially came from those points. However, like one of the subjects I know you wanted to talk about was how the narrative advanced. And it's kind of an interesting kind of like, not Catch-22, but it's an interesting kind of like evolvement of the game from where we first started. The game got launched. There was some story, but almost nothing. There was like two books and like this pamphlet was basically how we got introduced to the, there wasn't like like the AOS 2 starter book is brilliant. Which should have been the AOS 1 book. Like,
you're talking about the core book. Yeah.
Yeah, the core book. Yeah, I feel like it really started, obviously. At
that
AOS
book is
2.
Like 12 pages of rules and 280 pages of narrative and pictures of miniatures and stuff. Yeah, it's
which is
great.
Which is exactly what we want, right? Like, oh, I feel like in some ways.
Yep, with you.
Yeah, yeah. So, but the initial like start of the game and a huge portion might be unfair nowadays, but a significant portion of the gaming community, at least, like the game started out as a game more than it has become like a narrative setting, like because there really was no pitch initially for like getting people in, like it had no real draw, and then I feel like it really exploded with like GHB and then later battle tomes and like actual story evolving. I don't know, like if you agree with that, and then do you not feel that there's some sort of like you know, the community developed the game. Developed is a strong word, but like it made it feasible. Games Workshop took it, and then they don't seem to be caretaking it particularly well. Is a good sort of conversation, I would say, because our app doesn't get updated. The points are all over the show. I mean, they didn't even put the right points up for in the FAQ. So, like, that's just a bit like, come on. I mean, that's not, it's not even basic QA stuff. That's like, that's real simple. Like, what it is as bad as my tweeting, which is always a typo away from making me cry, which is every tweet I do, basically. There's a typo, like every one. So, like, do you know what I mean? Do you not think that there's some sort of conversation about, like, TOs making decisions or points in there? I agree with your statement, but I feel like there's also something that they're missing that we're not getting as a company from them as a company for the community.
Sure. So first, yes, I loved my wife's introduction of Owen Jackson. And I'm sorry, everybody, that I'm no Owen Jackson level celebrity, but I'll do what I can as far as today goes. Just to answer Gitly in the chat. My answer is ultimately it's not the delivery, the product that's delivered. Let me say that. Because like I don't know. Like, I feel pretty well taken care of. Certainly better than I ever did in Warhammer Fantasy. And again, maybe it's the perspective is always, I suppose, helpful, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, we get a lot of attention. We get articles. We get cool previews. We get releases that I enjoy. We get updates to armies that are reasonable. Like, they do a lot of good stuff. They have the two challenges I see them having that I would love to see them improve upon is one, largely to do with process driven stuff. And we've talked about this before. Mm. Right. And that's, you know, what I mean by that is they need to hire a formal developer. I saw them expanding their community team through a bunch of hiring a new presenter and a painting presenter and stuff. That's great. I think I'm glad to see they're hiring people. I mean, you know, they've been making a lot of money. It does take quite a long time to get budget approved and to hire people and stuff like that. I'm sympathetic to that. You know, I work for a large company. I know how it goes. Okay. Like you can know you need people and it can still take months for you to get people. That's just the nature of the world in corporate life. Right. And so I'm sympathetic to that. They're putting out recs. They're trying to get people in the door. Great. Fantastic, right? That's a good thing. I want to see them hire a formal developer, somebody who's there to literally just grind the math. They need to hire somebody who thinks like Tom, who has no role in design, by the by, okay? You don't use a designer for this. You use a formal developer. We've talked all about that before.
Yeah, we have.
The other thing I want to see is I want to see them change their communication strategy. So let me pitch an alternate article to you. I mentioned this, let me pitch to the audience. I mentioned it on Wednesday, but here we go. Imagine if the article had been published for the FAQ and it said, we did not change any points in this FAQ, like because we got the designer's commentary there, right?
Yeah.
The reason that we did that is there have been less games played, but we still felt like there could have been reasonable moves we made. We held off on doing it, though, however, because in the next 4 months, 5 months, we are going to release 4 different Broken Realms books, which are going to change points, war scrolls, and army composition. Mm-hmm. In addition, they could mention the AOS 3, you know, as we look forward to a new edition. Stop playing it close to the vest like we don't know that it's the case. Like, we all know it's coming, guys. Like, we know your roadmap. Because we've managed to piece it together because, you know, but like we can get this idea. But anyway, just say it. Just say, and there's a big, and we're looking forward to an edition change in the summer or whatever.
Yes.
These things are going to bring quite a lot of change to the game. We're aware that some armies have some challenges. And for you, Beasts of Chaos, Sylvaneth, and, you know, whatever, pick your armies. Like, we could pick a swath of underperforming armies. They're fairly obvious, right? Mm. Don't worry. We've got some really great stuff coming. So instead of just changing a few of your points by 10 or 20 points, we wanted to do this the right way. And so through Broken Realms, we're going to introduce some exciting new options that not only help balance the armies, but expand the ways you have to play your game, tell your story, and engage with Age of Sigmar. And ultimately, that's what we want. So we've held off on points changes here. We will be introducing a lot of change and look forward to big... And look forward to all the exciting stuff to come. Stay tuned here to Warcom. And you know, you're going to get a lot of fun stuff. Like, it's that easy. You don't even need to tell us what the Broken Realms books are.
Just being able to communicate with, like, I mean, I think that's probably the thing that's most disenfranchising about the process is it isn't a community that don't love what it is that they put out. You know,
of course.
Like, what's disenfranchising is talking to us like we're idiots. Yeah, like, and that's, like, it's rude. Like, you know, like,
there's a level of transparency.
If I went to a shop and the sign on the door just said closed, I'd be like, fair enough. But if I went to the door and it said closed and there was a clerk behind it giving me the finger, yeah, I'd be like, okay, like, I get that I can't come in, but that bit was unnecessary. I didn't need the aggressive statement anyway.
Right. So just to highlight something, because Born Again Manchild said this in the chat, and I really think this is true. He said change management seems completely foreign to them. And I think this is exactly the point. He just really nailed it. So change management is something I think about all the time. It's something we do all the time. We have to mitigate it with our clients heavily because we often introduce big changes into our software ecosystem and so on and so forth. Like, change management is a really important part of being a manager of a product line. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I think they need to focus more on because change management has a huge communication element to it. And a marketing element to it and a product element to it. There's lots of dimensions to change management and you need a sort of full court press to properly mitigate it. And by the way, that's how you stop feel bads in your community is proper change management.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that would be, so that's what I think they need to do better. They're making a bang on game. I mean, realistically, even with the game being where it is, most games are still incredibly fun and still mostly balanced. It only comes out in the wash when you see when you get sort of, you know, a couple bad matchups or stuff like that. I mentioned the story where I had, you know, we were playing a teams game last weekend and the other team was the Squig player and the LRL player. Mm-hmm. And the Squig player looked at the LRL player. These are my opponents, right? And the Squig player looked at the LRL player and was like, how do you have so many rules?
Yeah. I laughed at that, by the way. That was great. I really enjoyed it. I would say that I'm not necessarily like 100% on board with the statement that the game is in an okay place. And my reasoning is, and always will be, like Beast of Chaos is a good example of not having an update for a very long time. But not only is the external balance of that book been off for a significant amount of time, and let's also take Deepkin into effect as well. Deepkin and Beast of Chaos have both been at different ends of a spectrum where they've had almost no touching for 3 years, yet one has ridden the wave of quality and one has sunk to the bottom of the depths. Proud of that. So there's been an issue and they've done nothing about either for a long time. So there's, but when we could talk about external balance a lot, and I do think in casual games, a couple of statements to make. I do think in casual games it matters less. However, if the armies are closer together, the casual gamers are going to have more fun than the competitive gamers, because the competitive gamers already know the lay of the land, right? They're already there. So your casual gamer who's like, I've bought 4 Beast of Chaos Art Collecting boxes, this will be fun. And then the guy who's like, I've bought 4 Iron Head Deepkin boxes, this will be fun. It's not going to be fun for one person, right? Is going to be the situation.
Yeah.
But, like, so there's an issue there. But actually the thing that causes more of an issue for me, I think, than external balance, because I think the conversation as to whether or not that genuinely affects players outside of a competitive scene is a good one. The one I just made, that argument, I'm like, is that valid? Maybe. I think it is valid, but we'll kind of park it. The one that really kind of gets to me is internal balance, which I think they did such a great job of with the IDK book, right? I mean, they just made them stronger across the board, right? But we saw play for turtles, right?
Which is
cool. But like, internal balance has always been like a marked problem in the books, and the kind of concept of rule of cool, collect what you like, really does fly in the face of that. And I feel like the points updates every year can throw the meta around as much as they like, because people will adapt and move around, and I think that's interesting. But the internal balance rarely shifts. And I think that that's actually, like, because it's normally just a 10-point up and down, and that doesn't really ever do enough. Whereas, like, normally something gets nerfed, something gets banhammered, and then something else kind of takes its place, right?
Yeah.
But, like, there are so many cool models. The thing I like so much about this, and it's something even over the past few weeks has been really, like, honing in on me, is I do just like the evocative nature of the game, the models, the miniatures, the environment, and I can't wait to talk to you about the story in a minute, like how fun it is, like, to look at and see and visualize and create this great story. But so many things are so trash that they don't get to see the table, and that might be why you're in love with them. Like, I don't know if you saw the Ogre Hunter that I love at the moment.
Hunters
aren't bad, they're just not the comp choice, really. And
I think if you had a competitive list, you should absolutely in ogres. I think a hunter and some wolves is not a bad choice at all. That ambush is strong,
but they don't make it into lists at the minute. Like, they don't, like, and that's with ogres doing like medium. So I wouldn't really, but I want to put him in because he looks awesome, right? And that's kind of my point. I feel like the internal balance is more of an issue. So I've said a lot there. I'll let you. I don't have much. Wanted to go on.
No, that's fine. Two thoughts. One, I do still think the game is in an okay to good place. I agree with your point about external balance, but that is to say, you know, it's also looking at, like, when you look at Beast of Chaos, the problem that they've had is that they don't fix the things that they need to fix. You can't fix a lot of things with points. Beast is a great example. Points can't fix that army. You need War Scroll changes. I did a survey a while back, and what the community wants at a 2-to-1 ratio is War Scroll changes, not points changes, right? If they had to pick one. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately what you need, right? And finally, that's what we're getting in Broken Realms. So I'm glad to see we've picked a delivery mechanism that's going to do that. Okay,
agreed.
So great.
Agreed.
Fantastic. Because you saw that it can be highly effective when you have something like that happen in IDK, right? We know that there are just certain scrolls that are just, they don't work as written. They have no role, right? And by the way, I'm okay with some things just kind of not having a role and being for funsies. Like, that's kind of always going to be the case in some of these books. If you've got like 60 War Scrolls in your book,
see now where I agree with you on that, but I don't think they do a good enough job on that is do that. like you know, the kind of Blood Bowl mentality where it's like these are the teams you play with, and these are the fun zany stuff. Like Gobblepalooza is a good example. Nathan, please don't confine me and beat me to death. Like, it's a hilarious collection of like mad units and rules, and someone says, I'm gonna do my you know what's it role, and you're like, I honestly think you might be mental. Like, and right. it's a hilariously fun game, and Skaven to a degree as well. But a lot of their kind of zany choices are also pretty cop choices. So, like, I don't think they necessarily do enough. Look, this is just out there and weird and fun, you know, units in a book as well. Like, so
they should have more just interesting and unique rules for those things that aren't competitive. That way, they still have a reason to have to show up and be fun. A good example of failed scrolls in the Skaven book, for example, is like everything Eshin, right? That isn't the Vermintlord Deceiver. Yeah. Where, like, you know, you can make an Eshin army and it's a joke. I mean, that those scrolls are just some of the worst in the game. In fact, they were two out of the 10 worst scrolls in the game when we recently did that show. But the ultimately, like, you can play a lot of games and not feel the pain depending on what it is. There's always going to be a list dependence. There's always going to be a player dependence. And here's what I'll say. You, my dear Rob, so, being a member of the upper crust, being a sommelier,
I'm down with the kids. I'm on the front lines. Is where I am. I got diamond hands, and I'm right at the bottom. Yeah. Right. So
being a sommelier of Age of Sigmar.
Okay.
Right. The reason that you have a sommelier bring you wine is because they can detect the subtle notes within the wine. Mm-hmm. Right. They can spot the hillside that it was grown on from a bit of a swish and a bit of a sniff. Yeah.
And really that's you this.
Because you're deep into it. So the minor differences that occur that to you make a wine taste robust or delicious or rich, right? Versus tasting acidic or sour. You find those notes so strongly. But the average player is happy to go to the corner store and pick up a $5 box of wine and say, this tastes pretty good. Okay?
Yes.
They're not going to notice the differences because that's just not in their games, mm-hmm. right? Now, so you will always sense that, like, you're the princess with the pea under her mattress. Okay?
That's a nice way of calling me a snowflake. I appreciate you.
No, I just mean, like, you're very sensitive to it because you're so deep in it, and you're a competitively minded fellow who literally 7 days a week talks about this, Rob. Right? Like, most people just aren't invested to this level. So I get it.
Who definitely is.
Sure. I understand, and I feel it too. I just also am lucky that, like, most of the people who come over and play in my group, like in my club, they think about Warhammer about an hour before they show up to play, the time we're playing, and maybe the 20 minutes after we're talking about it. And then they are not going to think about Warhammer again until they show up the next week, right?
Yeah.
So, at any rate, that isn't an excuse to not change stuff, because the point you made I completely agree with is, when you improve these things, a rising tide will lift all boats. Right? The casual people will have less random bad games for reasons they don't understand. Necessarily.
Yes.
Right. When you fix these things. So I think they should be more aggressive with war scroll changes. I think we need a good delivery method for this. Right. I think that we should boost these scrolls up. I think we should have we should still have points refinements every 6 months. They should always be doing that kind of change because it's what keeps the game healthy. As to internal balance, you know, look at a thing like Cities of Sigmar. What's the right way to balance something like that? Look, there's never going to be a perfect world where you actually, from a very refined competitive stance, feel the need to run either hammers or greatswords or executioners or the seven different other greatsword wielding two-handed weapon troops that are in there since we shoved all those armies together, right? Yeah. Like, you can do power pairs, you can give people reasons to play them casually and to have fun with them. But in the end, the competitive people are going to go, this one's better because it's 1% better or 10% better or 50% better, so hence it's the one that shows up in the competitive lists, okay? Because it's part of the better synergistic ecosystem. fine. And they should have power pairs and reasons to do all of them, and all of them should have value. But that doesn't mean they're all going to be equally highly competitive. If you really wanted that, what you would do is you would just have a unit called, like, called Big Weapon Troops. Okay?
Okay, yeah.
They got big weapons. And it would be just like, and it would literally just have pictures down the side of the war scroll of everything I just named. And it would be like, elves, dwarves, and men united together for a love of giant phallic weapons, right? Like, they love them. If it's a 4 to 6 foot long weapon that you can kill or smash an opponent with, they're here for it. And it would just be like, here's their stock standard profile. And you could just mix the unit with anything you want, right? And that's just not what they're going to do. Because that's not, in the end, what we want. We want the elves to feel and fight slightly different than the humans or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, I absolutely hear what you're saying. And also, I just want to agree with Grinaldi in the chat for holding me to account and us to account. Is that, like, narrative players? And I touch on this a lot. I think narrative players are still competitive players, but, like, we could kind of. I'm talking about new players. Like, so just always put it into new. New players can be disenfranchised, I think, by not understanding. You can lose, like you said, you can have a bad play experience, Vince, and not understand why you have had a bad play experience, because it's a complicated game to play. Like, you know, like, and it doesn't have to be. You can make it as simple as you want, but ultimately, like, there's still a lot going on, and you could have a bad experience. You don't know why, like, at all.
To be clear, Grinaldi, I'm not talking about dumb people. That's not at all. I never said dumb, and I hope that isn't the connotation that I said from my words. But let me go ahead and pull a Tom here and be 100% clear. And that is to say, what I mean is low information players. Every player of this game is, there's a spectrum of information. Like, Rob, pick a war scroll. Go. Pick a war scroll.
Frostheart Phoenix.
Okay.
Anointed of Assyrian on Frostheart Phoenix. There we go.
Okay. The Frostheart Phoenix has an aura that's neg one to wound. He costs, what, 260, 280 points, something like that, I think.
He's 320 now. But yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
There you go. So 320 points. He's got 14 inch fly. Is that right?
Yes. It might be 14 or 16, but probably 14. Okay. Let's go for that.
The anointed guy on top can make 4 attacks on 3s, neg one, 1 damage. The Phoenix itself has.
He has 8.
He's got a 4, and because they're anointed, they've got their after save. If you've got the guy on top, he can provide Battleshock immunity to the Phoenix Guard around him. Right now, I've never played that unit once in my life. I just got pretty close to describing it. Okay, like, sure, I could check the scroll, but my point is, like, I'm a high information player. Okay, like, if somebody sets down a Frostheart Phoenix next to me. Across from me, I know roughly what it does. I know its rough damage output. I know roughly how far it can move, what it's going to do, how hard it's going to be to remove, what its purpose is in the army, its role it fills, right? The other troops it synergizes with, the command ability it can use. Like, I know all of this stuff, okay? And I'm not trying to be like, look at me, I'm so smart. No, I'm a loser who has nothing better to do. That's what I'm saying, right? Let's get that, all right?
That's not true. You've got a lovely wife and great dogs. That's true.
But my point is that not everybody has that knowledge, and you can't expect everybody to. That's a nonsense amount of knowledge, mm-hmm. right? And my only point is there's a big spectrum of information, and people who tend to be low information players, which, by the way, there is nothing wrong with. That's what I'm saying. I want the game to be better for them. And you do that when you do improve all this stuff. That's all I'm saying, Grinaldi. So I in no way meant any insult or to say players are dumb or anything like that. I just mean people have wives and kids and jobs and lives where they don't just sit around and talk and read war scrolls all day.
Speak for yourself.
people other than Rob and I.
Well, okay. So, like, we spent longer than maybe they wanted on that. But the point I was going to try and make was, comparatively, yeah, is while the development of the games, the development of the game and then the caretakership or stewardship of the game, I think, has been a little reticent by Games Workshop, to the point of maybe even negligence would be something I'd be willing to have a conversation about, because I do think that is the case. The app is a good example. I don't think the GHB was particularly inspiring, but like they didn't change anything, which was pretty good. It's like sometimes you're like, do you know what? Thumbs up, you did little. So we're happy with that. But the conversely or transversely or how or whatever that you'd be able to tell me better, the narrative is actually where they've excelled, and interestingly is where the whole game is really. Or the environment, or however you want to like, which word you want to use it for, but the ecosystem of Age of Sigmar, I think, has really, really developed. And it feels like the rules and the development of the rules in the game really don't have the same forethought, attention to detail, and execution that we're seeing with the narrative. The narrative seems like to have like interspersed little pockets of information which pop up later, which is super fun, which I know you've been really invested in seeing. And then we've seen these come to fruition, and we've got this expanding storyline, and then we've there's a very sharp difference. So I really wanted to talk about the positive of how the narrative moves, because I don't think we need to like continuously bang on about
six-hour show and just bang on about this. But you know, to answer Kelbar's question real quick, and then yeah, I agree. Let's move on to the narrative. How do you help people whose army is made up of bad units due to army war scrolls being weak, which loses almost every week? My answer is you do exactly what I just said. You need to change the war scrolls, right? Like that's the thing we haven't been doing for multiple years, because they made a change to Caradhran Overlords too fast. The community flipped their lids and went, ah! And by the way, if you don't think negative feedback affects them, I point correct to you to Caradhran Overlords, where they got burned so bad by all those changes, which were delivered in poor form and didn't have good change management. All of that is true. Everything I said about communication holds there, right? But they learned the wrong lesson. Like Hollywood, they learned the wrong lesson, right? Deadpool was good not because it was an R-rated superhero movie. It was good because it was funny and we liked the character and it was an interesting story. And it was fun to watch Ryan Reynolds because he's a very charismatic person, okay? Like, that's – so learn the right lessons. Bad way to deliver changes, good way to deliver changes, yeah? And so – they learned a bad lesson, they stuck with it for a while, but now they're coming back out of it. They found a better method to deliver that people have responded very positively to, which I'm excited about because it means we'll get more of it in the future. Our collective community feedback, I am quite positive they hear it and respond.
For narrative, not for rules. It's by happen. Not so there's an interesting kind of like dichotomy with actually their other game in 40K, where and Bonnie and Manchild brought it up, and I think it's true. And following both of those, the Psychic Awakening books narrative were just hot garbage, like absolutely worthless. Like if you want something terrible to read, read the Space Wolf Saga of the Beast Psychic Awakening book. Honestly, Vince, like you would like, I think you'd write an essay about like just how poor it was. You'd be like, this is awful. However, the rules hit and miss, but mainly hit across the launch of Psychic Awakening. And it's not like the rules for Broken Realms were not, but generally they've been pretty on point with trying to keep the game really good for 40K. And the narrative really has fallen by the wayside. And I feel like there's a dichotomy with Age of Sigmar, which I think is interesting. It's not really the main point. I want to focus on the narrative and its growth and its inclusion. However, it is an interesting kind of point. Scriver in the chat said they can't do both, and I love that they've only got like so much ingenuity. They're like, okay lads, we've got 100% ingenuity, what do we go, like, let's go 80% narrative on this game,
gotta work with them sliders. Yeah, I mean, again, just hire a formal developer. Like, they just need to change. It's partially a people problem in that you don't have enough people in the mix. But you just need to adapt modern processes of game design. That's all it is.
So talking about what have you enjoyed about like the developing and like ongoing narrative, like moving?
It's forward? So good. Like Phil Kelly is out there killing it. I love the way they've mapped it out. That they've started planting those seeds and then picked it up. It's a great method. By the way, I call it's the method I've used as a GM in role playing games for 30 years. It's how J.K. Rowling writes books. I mean, there's other things we'd say about her that are not positive, but
she's a piece of shit. But we'll move on.
Indeed. At any rate, it's what I call the breadcrumbs method. When you're writing your story, you just write a bunch of little things. Okay. Mm-hmm. You just drop little loose threads all throughout your story of like, here's a cool reference to something that could be like Sigvald. And then they came back later and picked that up and reintroduced Sigvald. Now, they didn't probably know when they wrote that. When they wrote that little bit about the Caradhran overlords retrieving the mirror with the vainest being in the mortal realms, that they were definitely going to do Sigvald. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I don't know. But the point is they don't have to, right?
Yeah, I mean, they got a 2-year lead on minis, like,
sure.
Which I think is fascinating. So then that means, like, you can pretty much go back to, and I know they also have a lead on the books as well, but those conversation points, you know, like over lunch or like Phil sat down with some of the miniature designs or even goes down there, which I know he does. And it's just like, oh, we're going to do Sigvald. It's like, oh, that's cool. You know, like, you know, I'm sure they have those meetings. So like seeing those interspersed does make sense because of the lengthy kind of like production window that they give themselves,
sure.
Which I actually think is really exciting because actually it gives you a reading, even the Marathi book coming out, which we know on the back of Broken Realms, there'll be some updates to. There might be some little nuggets hidden away in there for future releases.
Which yeah.
It gives us a good reason to read them. Yeah.
Of leaving these threads. And then they don't pick all of them up, right? Like, there's tons of loose threads that are out there if you go back to, like, you know, all these resources that have come out over the past years. Some of them get picked up and played with. Some of them don't. And if you're someone invested in the lore, it's a great payoff for you because you're like, ha-ha, I knew that.
Yeah.
I knew that was going to happen. And it's wonderful. Like, as a community, we love seeing those threads get pulled.
Yeah.
Right. And it's so great to watch all of that evolve. And they have been killing it. Like, Broken Realms, the fact that we're still talking about the first Broken Realms book 2-3 months later, right? And how excited we are about it, how much it did for the game, both by the way, rules wise and narratively, and how cool the narrative was, says everything you need to say. Right there, right? Like, I'm not close to the 40K community, so I don't know how much people were talking about any individual Psychic Awakening book 3 months after it came out. But it feels like, I think we all felt a tectonic impact from this book, right? And so they seem bolder with Age of Sigmar. This is one of the things I want to talk about, right? This is why I reached out to you, because they seem bolder with AOS. Willing to shake up the status quo more. 40K has always felt very static to me. Even their big giant event that led into 8th edition didn't really feel that big giant. I guess if you were like a diehard Cadian player, maybe you cared. But like I said, let me just lay down quick groundwork. Here we go.
Yeah.
In 40K, because the clock is 2 seconds to midnight, always, right? You can't actually tell a traditional story. Stories have beginnings, middles, and ends. The stories we love have beginnings, middles, and ends, right?
Yep.
And ends are an important part. If there's not an end, it's not a story. It's just an ongoing, like, just talking.
Can I make a point with this? Just to intersperse real quick. So one of my favorite series of books is by an author called Raymond E. Feist. So it starts off with a book called Magician about Pug, if anyone's ever read it. So it's a trilogy, obviously, and then it moves on. And I think probably there's another trilogy, then there's another trilogy in the same world, then I think there's a fourth trilogy. Interestingly, I started on like the third trilogy, second book, just as a book, a front cover I liked, I bought it, and then I went back at the start and started again. But actually, it was really interesting for me because obviously you have all the main characters in your first trilogy, and then he kind of moves it on 10 or 15 years into book two, right? In the second trilogy. And then I fall in love with a new cast of characters. And then I get this excitement. I'm like, when one of them pops back in. Like,
yeah, sure.
be it for a long period of time or a short period of time. I think that's really exciting. And then, obviously, next trilogy, again, new main cast of characters. And again, there's some references, or even the guys from book one are more mythos, you know, and they're kind of like elevated. And I like that from a world building perspective. And I like that from a storytelling perspective as well, because ultimately, like, I narrowed in on these characters, and it didn't feel like he was laden with this kind of like train of story from the past. Whereas, and I think in 40K, you could absolutely do that. You could just start a new cast of characters, start telling a story. You know, you could have Marnie's Khalgar pop up at some point, or not even, just be the guy who's in charge of the world or the war zone that you're in or whatever. But they always, I think because it's related to miniatures, they have to do a story about the miniature. You know, like it's a bit like going back and watching the next, I mean, I'll watch like 500 John Wicks. Like, if they're like, this is John Wick 783, I'm like, God damn it, I can't wait. Like,
sure.
Right? But that's quite rare, ultimately. And so, you know, like, I feel like that they could do that and they don't. Like, they have to always repeat that through. Maybe it's because we haven't had as much story for the actual cast of characters in Age of Sigmar. And so when we got something like Marathi, like, that was cool because we got an actual story about a character, which we rarely get, which I think is good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that's fair. And I mean, ultimately, there's a lot to sort of unpack here, right, about the various... The various like ways you tell stories and you know, the nature of time. And that's what I want to get into.
Yeah.
Because I think there is a solution here, even from a miniature's perspective. And I'm going to prove that to you in a way later. I've brought receipts.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So stories have beginnings, middles, and ends, right? And what 40K does well is zoom in and tell like nice small stories on a world, on a something, about a character, you know, yada, 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 right? Mm. It can do that pretty well. It can't tell large stories well. Because ultimately, the status quo is the status quo. It needs to remain the status quo because everybody's on the edge of not existing.
Yep.
Right? And they have this ever present. Like, we only care about the game in the present. And so there's this cognitive dissonance. I mentioned this on the last show. When we kind of talked about this during your big Christmas marathon, right? Mm-hmm. And there's this cognitive dissonance where you're playing an army that you believe will win. My Orkwa will take over the galaxy or whatever. My Tyranids will consume everything and put it into their biomass, right? The Imperium will fight back the hordes of chaos. Chaos Gate will spill open. I don't care. Whatever. Pick your thing, right? Enough tomb worlds will awaken to rebuild the Necron Empire. I don't care. None of that's ever going to happen. That will never happen. None of it. The Imperium will never be saved, but it will never be destroyed. The Tyranids will never consume everything. The Orcs will never wah big enough. None of that will ever happen. None of it.
True.
Zero of that will ever happen.
And you know that as well.
Because of the way that the story is told, right? But it could. It doesn't have to be the case that those kinds of things can't happen. Okay?
Yeah.
And let me tell you why I know that for sure. I've got two proof points for that. Ready? Like, we could do those things. We could literally have the Tyranids eat entire races and win. Okay? Mm-hmm. And wipe out, for all intents and purposes, entire races. Okay? I know that's the case because there's this game called 30K, or the Horus Heresy, where there was only the Imperium, and then all of a sudden, a bunch of Space Marines had a bad day and got real sad, and then they went and tried to kill the Emperor. Mm-hmm. Right? I think I'm summarizing the whole story, right?
Pretty much perfect, actually.
Yeah.
Save you reading 40 books.
Absolutely. And that's, yes. And even though literally the summation of the Horus Heresy is some Space Marines got angry or sad and then went and tried to kill their brothers and the Emperor. Mm-hmm. And they didn't quite succeed.
It's literally if their dad had given them a hug, all right. Fine.
Like, there we go. We just summarized the entire Horus Heresy. Okay. Yeah. Right. But yet they wrote 40 books about it or whatever. And they'll, you know, and you could write 40 more.
You could. So, okay. Side note, my favorite faction in the Horus Heresy and maybe 40K is the Mechanicus, specifically because there's like this galactic war and they do kind of get involved, but mainly it's a couple of weirdos rubbing oil on like a machine as like this galactic war's going off. And they're like, oh, look at those fellas. They're going wild over there. But don't worry, sure. I'll look after you.
Right. So,
really enjoy those, but please keep going.
And so my point is that you knew when you picked up book one of the Horus Heresy series, when they started that forever ago, mm-hmm. you knew what the end of that story was, ultimately.
Yes.
Right? Like, because we know what it is. We know Horus kills Sanguinius. They have a fight with the Emperor. Horus dies. Emperor gets put into the Golden Throne. Blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
Right? Cool. Like, that's the end of the story. And yet people still loved these books. Loved them. Because learning the details, the nitty-gritty of the people and the places of what happened is really interesting.
It's Let true. Me
receipt the second.
Yep.
You're aware that 150 years ago, 60 years ago, here in the United States, we had this thing called the Civil War, right? Like, we had a Civil War.
Mm-hmm. My favorite president was in charge at the time.
Okay. Mr. Abraham Lincoln.
Mr. Lincoln.
Yes. And so the Civil War, spoiler alert, the South loses. Okay?
I'm not sure all of your brethren have got that memo, but yeah, we'll concede the point for now. Yeah.
And by the by, I'm picking that war, but you can pick any war, because there's this entire genre called historical wargaming, where they seek to explore and play, and not even just wargaming. We can expand this to just people who like these battles and write books about these battles. Like, I have a good friend who's a Civil War historian and travels to all these battle sites and, you know, goes and finds like old letters and stuff like that and writes really drilled in stories about particular engagements, battlefields and stuff like that, and goes and talks to the descendants of like the people who were fighting and does interviews. And like, this is the books that he writes, and it's literally just zoom in on the Civil War, and they're very popular. Right. I picked the Civil War because it's like it's got a lot of popularity here in the U.S. People like reading about that war. It's fascinating to us. Right. Because it's something that where, you know, you turn against yourself. It's not you against an external nation or whatever. But the point is that it's like the Horus Heresy in that way. And I think the Civil War would have been improved by like people in giant power armor with flaming swords. But my point is that like, everybody knows how the Civil War ends. Yeah?
Yeah, they do. They do.
Or any other war in history. Okay? It has an ending. We've recorded it. It happened. And yet, people still write books about it. And we love to see the drill in and what happened and moment to moment in the battle. How many freaking movies have we made about just one particular invasion in World War II, or one particular battle in World War II, or tank squad, or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah.
And guess
lot.
What? The Axis powers lose.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's I think someone in the chat said it earlier, it's the story inside. Like, you don't need a conclusion. Can I just thank John Thompson for donating £10 to the show? He said, pair character flying in the air with a red cape and a smile on his face. He likes to haiku it, I think, when he donates the money. So big love, John Thompson. Thanks for that. Loads. It's the stories inside, right? Like, that's why Age of Sigmar, it could be so exciting if they moved away. I think one of the things that is problematic is they focus a lot on the gods in Age of Sigmar. Like, it's what's Alariel doing? What is Morathi doing? And I'm like, I get it, but they're god-level characters. They really should be in the background of the story, I feel. Like, not part of the story. Did you watch... So there was, like, the 300, and then there was, like, 302. But then there was another one. Like, was it Rise of the Titans? It was... did you happen to see that movie?
Yeah.
And it had all the gods in it. The gods sure. kept interacting. But the humanization of the gods was... It was weird. Like, I didn't... Like... I mean, the movie was probably pretty subpar anyway, but like, I just didn't gel with that kind of like representation of God. Whereas obviously the best representation of God that's ever happened ever in the history of time is in Dogma, when it's Natalie Imbruglia.
Sure. Of course. Yes. But no doubt. I like completely agree. Obviously Natalie Imbruglia is an Australian national treasure. At any rate. So I am not torn on that. At any rate, okay, two thoughts. One, completely disagree with the point you can't tell interesting stories of the gods. I don't care about farmers. You can tell interesting story with people and gritty street level stuff, and you can tell interesting story with gods. Blood of Zeus anime is basically focused on a bunch of gods smashing each other in the face, and also like a demigod dude who's still way above humans, and it was super cool anime done by a bunch of Greek people telling their like some fun myths from their own culture. You can do that. You can tell everybody seemed to really like that God of War series. They made a bunch of them. Kratos is far from human. You could line 10,000 human soldiers up against Kratos, and that little spinny, flamey chain thing he fights with, there'd be like 10,000 dead humans 5 minutes later, okay? Kratos is still an interesting character. It has nothing to do with power level. Superman can be one of the best characters you've ever read that tells to sell stories with. You can tell interesting stories with gods. Jack Kirby's New Gods was one of the coolest storylines ever. There's a bunch of amazing stuff there, and those are people literally who are called gods in their name. And yet, it's pathos. You care when there's pathos, right? Stories are bad when they're just about big people smashing each other in the face for reasons we can neither understand nor empathize with. Stories are good when they're about people doing things for reasons we can understand and empathize with. And you can get that from a street-level person. You can get that from a god. I care about Nagash if he has real motivation. I care about Sigmar if he has real motivation and I can understand it. It doesn't matter that he can, like, whip lightning bolts thousands of miles and destroy armies. Who cares? Neat. That's a cool trick. Like, I love watching some... I love it in movies when I'm gonna there's a thing that happens in movies with badasses. Mm-hmm. Certain movies have badass protagonists, and you see this in some movies. And my favorite moment in one of those in those movies universally, when you've got like Superman or somebody like that around, is when some dumb person crosses the line with them. Okay. And the protagonist gets the look, like this happened, yes, this happens in John Wick or anything. The protagonist has the, you done effed up face, okay? Yes. And they realize it. And I love that moment where some dummy who is not on the same level as the hero, who's way above them, just gets housed. It's a great moment. It feels so cathartic because we've all been there where we just want to turn to somebody and be like, you done effed up, but we live in a civil society. I can't pick somebody up and throw them into the sun, but Superman can, okay? That's great. Anyways, my point is, pathos is what matters. You can tell great stories with gods.
Okay.
Let me get back to my main point.
Yeah.
So we know, and we both agree, I think, that you can tell good stories that are zoomed in, regardless of knowing the end. The problem is, in 40K, we do this only with the past, and we keep the time current. So, point the third of how you do this. As I said, I did bring receipts. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the game Battletech?
I've heard of it, never played it, or no, in more than that.
Okay, I love Battletech. I played Battletech since, I don't know, the mid-90s, okay?
Okay.
Now, I don't play it a lot, but I play it some. And I really love MechWarrior. I love it as a role-playing game, honestly, more than a miniatures game, but it is a miniatures game. Right. It
yep.
Ostensibly the core of that game is a miniatures game. There are little mechs.
Yep.
They you drive them around. You shoot your friends. It's a great time. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. The nature of Battletech. I have the books, by the way, just as a visual reference here.
Good.
Okay. Battletech. Can you read what this says, Rob? Can you see what that says right there?
No, I can't see. Sorry.
That's right. Technical readout. 2750.
Okay.
Technical readout 3025. Technical readout 3039. These are the years.
Yeah.
It's the year it's taking place. Now, I'll die on the hill that actually Battletech is a much more interesting universe than 40K. But at any rate, the point is what those are pointing to are years where that's happening. The stuff that's in this book. The miniatures,
nice.
The mechs, are nice. Of this era. They're identified by variant, okay?
Yeah. I mean, so to touch on it very quickly, it's one of my, and I've talked about this a lot, one of my favorite pieces of game design from Games Workshop ever. There's a couple of bits, but most importantly, it was the Horus Heresy books as they went through while Alan was still in charge. And then what they did was you had the Age of Darkness, which was the kind of, like, it was the initial kind of, like, attack and the assault, and the kind of traitor legions like launching this ungodly attack. But then the next stage, so these were for kind of like the battle plans or the missions. The next stage was the Shadow War. So then so the books, very much like you're just talking with tech, so you'd be like, do you want to play an Age of Darkness game? But like, yeah, there was a very specific sort of setup. Yes. And even how you built your armies And then in the Shadow War, which is still when he did it, I was like, you've changed the meta, that you've changed none of the rules of the units, you've changed none of the points, you've done nothing, you've just changed how we form our armies and how we play in the Shadow War start. So you'd be like, I'm playing a Shadow War game, like, sweet. And then it would change up, mainly if you bought like heavy stuff, like if you bought heavy support stuff, that meant that you didn't get like the roll off, like you had minus points. If you brought scouts, you got plus points. So it's like a cool little thing. Like, that sounds amazing, right? Like, is that what Battletech does, basically?
Exactly. You're exactly right. So like this in 3039, the current, I don't know, whatever, like pick a mech, the current like Jaeger mech, or here we go, my favorite. We'll do the Hato Mato Chi is the HTM-26T. That's the current version. You can actually see it right there, right?
Yeah.
And but yet, there's a thing called about variants. If I went forward years, then I could find a different variant with a different armament for the Hato Mato Chi, okay? If I go back years into the 2750, it doesn't exist yet. They hadn't created the Hato Mato Chi yet. That mech doesn't exist in this readout, okay? The ages, and by the way, Battletech keeps going. There's eras that keep evolving. You have the Star League, which is this, 2750, which is like the time of humanity's height. Everybody, the entire galaxy, the inner sphere, is bound together in this great and glorious league, okay? And then there's a traitor general who comes back and leads an insurrection against the head of the Star League.
Sure, I've heard that story, but...
It's weird, right? At any rate, and then the Star League breaks up, and you get to the... after the Star League breaks up, you get to the Succession War period, where you get great houses, okay, who take over their section of space and then proceed to have four repeated wars against each other, driving their technology into the dirt. Like, the technology of that era, even though it's forward in time, is lower, because when that general left the Inner Sphere, General Kerensky, when he leaves the Inner Sphere after the insurrection, he kills the insurrectionist, hates how all the houses have acted, and he leaves. So he's not the insurrectionist. He's the guy who ended up killing the insurrectionist. But whatever. He leaves the Inner Sphere, shoots off into unknown space, takes three quarters of the entire military with him, leaves a quarter of the troops remaining. They fight wars, drive, destroy their own technology. That's the Succession War period. Then you get into the Clan Invasion many, many years later, decades and decades later. Kerensky comes back, hundreds of years later, Kerensky comes back. And he brings with him a new type of soldier with new mechs. Where the Inner Sphere has spent hundreds of years destroying itself, fighting civil wars, he has spent hundreds of years training the greatest warriors, making effectively Space Marines, by the way.
Yeah.
And they show up with technology far beyond what the Inner Sphere has. And they start ripping through the Inner Sphere, tearing it apart. Just destroying the forces that oppose them with the goal to just take over the entire Inner Sphere. They're eventually stopped by Comstar, which is like a very ad mech organization. They're on Mars. They're literally housed on Mars. It's the exact same place. But it's just a thing, I guess. But they oversee all the communications in the galaxy. That's why they're powerful. Okay. Yeah. So, like, in other words, if you all want to keep having a civilization, you better pay attention to us. Cross us, we'll turn off your phones. And that's a big deal when you live planets apart.
Yeah, of right? course.
So Comstar ends up stopping them. That's the end of the Clan Invasion, right? Time goes forward. Eventually you get to the Civil War, then the Jihad period, and then the Dark Age, right? And then the I-Clan, or whatever, the Ill-Clan, sorry. Things massively change in each one of these eras. Houses... Great nations exist and fall and are destroyed, right? Clans exist and rise and fall in each of these things. Like, huge changes are riven to the universe, okay? And what it means is that in certain of these time periods, you can play certain variants of mechs, and in certain others, you can't, right? Because they're just not available, they're not there. You have different army compositions, different stuff, you know what I mean? Like, if you're playing a Star League era game, you have different mechs. You have different, like, construction of your force.
Yeah.
Right? The same thing could be done here. Like, we could move the 40K world forward in big ways and just demarcate the ages. We already did this in Age of Sigmar. The game is literally called Age of Sigmar.
And we're not even in the Age of Sigmar anymore. Like, that's not the age we're in. Are we in the Age of Sigmar? Yes.
We're still in the Age of Sigmar, but then there's, like, we're in the sub-epochs, right? Of, like, the Realmgate Wars and the Soul Wars and stuff like that. We have the epochs within the Age of Sigmar. My point is you have these past eras already sketched out, right? The Age of Myth, the Age of Chaos, the Age of Sigmar. There's no reason you couldn't keep moving these forward. 40K could just, like, jump the timeline. 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 years.
Or, I mean, they have 10,000 years. Like between the heresy and now, where they can go back to at any point. Like someone in the chat earlier suggested a game of like pre-Primaris. Like, you know, you could be like, do you fancy a game of non-Primaris based 40K? Like, but you could play with the modern rules, right? Like, you just, they're not part of the storyline or something similar, which I think is quite interesting. I really like that idea. Yeah, they could. They've got loads of backstory to play in and create like a timeline for, and they've also got, obviously, they could jump forward. Yeah, and
yes,
they could do
also... and that's what you do. You jump, you have these big changes to the world, right? Like, okay, Eldar destroyed, like, as a civil, let's just do this, let's play a thought experiment. Ready?
Yeah,
we're gonna jump the 40K universe forward like 3,000 years. It's now Warhammer 44,000 or whatever, and the Eldar have been destroyed completely. Like, they're wiped out. You can still play your Eldar, but you're representing like a small partisan force, the last remnants of your civilization, right? Mm-hmm. That's it. You're like, because I mean, the galaxy is really big. It's hard to actually wipe somebody completely out, right? But even all their craft worlds, all their little flying ships, everything's been destroyed. For the most part, they have no more civilization, right? The Tyranids consumed all the orcs. Like,
perfect.
That's it. That happened. If you want to, you can play orcs. But again, if you're playing orcs, you're like, you're a few orcs who are, like, hidden on a system, right? There's no Great Waz anymore or whatever, right? And the Tyranids are now this massive looming threat in the galaxy, right? And we use it to introduce a bunch of new stuff and, like, go forward. The Tyranids have this option and whatever, right? And the Imperium and Chaos are, like, both have to, like, stop kind of fighting each other. It's not like they're working together. But they're like, whoa, 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 look, hey, chill, chill, chill. Some bugs over there. We got to deal with this, guys. We're all going to get eaten.
Yeah, the bugs are the existential threat. So you get allies convenience, which is super. Or maybe you even get units that are like hyper specialized, like orcs who specifically designed to take out Tyranids. You know, like Eldar who specifically like have developed strategies to fight Tyranids. So you can almost release like whole ranges that play into that time zone. But then they could also release back into, let's say, the modern. Or like the current like time, if you will, or the five minutes of midnight. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
And then you go backwards, and in the stories you start exploring the little stories in the way, right? How did we get here? What insanity happened that led to this moment, right? And we can drill in. And then, by the way, we can do it again. Like, you can just keep doing this.
Yeah.
Right? We'll jump another 2,000 years. And what's happened? Oh, the Tyranids have been defeated. And there is a giant orc wa pushing in from the other side that is literally pushed into the realm of chaos. And now chaos is getting destroyed because orcs exist. We're only looking at one galaxy, right? So like orcs come in from another galaxy in a truly massive wa with a new leader, right? Some new great super Ghazagool, right? And they've led a wa that wiped out, like they chewed through everything on their way. Their diesel-powered spaceships have just cut a swath through the galaxy. And they're pushing, like, they're aiming for the Chaos Rift. They want the ultimate prize. Like, they're going to go wah on the Chaos Gods.
Well, cool, okay? cool little side bit. Like, so orcs normally, like, with their guttural language, but in the Beast of Rises series, love mentioning it, and I will always. The orcs, because obviously they get stronger, but smarter as well, the bigger the wah. They end up speaking High Gothic. And have this like out again. If you've not read that book series, I give you a great opportunity. Like I would play in the Beast of Rises timeline. It was like 10 books that they released. It was in like 3200, so 32K was the time frame. I would play that game system area time zone because it was just so good. Like the books are great, the timeline was great, but there were orcs that were just so dominating and powerful. You could release all of those like models, that timeline.
Yes.
You could.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's such like this is the solution. It's already been done in another game. Like when I play MechWarrior in BattleTech, I play generally during the Secession War time period. I like that time period. It's what appeals to me. So we use variants from that time period when we play the role-playing game. The story is of that time period. The houses are of that time period. That's what my group and I enjoy, right? But you can still take your mechs forward, right? Like, you could use Horus Heresy era armor, Space Marines, like Mark III or whatever is Horus Heresy era, I think, or Mark IV, I don't remember exactly. Like, but they already have this concept of the marks of the different armors types, right? But you can, like, you can play that stuff in current 40K. Like, you can have your Marines have, like, Mark III or Mark IV armor or whatever and have that be a thing, right? Like, oh, they just have antiqued legacy armor they've passed down generation to generation, and they care for it greatly, right? Because these are sacred relics, right? And, you know, there's no reason, like, once you create this stuff, it just keeps going forward because it can always stick around, right? And it would give them interesting ways to do new releases. You can play in the epoch you want. And all it would do is change sort of your composition rules. That's it. You still have all the figs. It's just you want to play in this area, you do this. By the way, you want to ignore all this crap, just play a game.
Yeah. Like, right? someone in the chat has said, there's a couple of really great points being made in the chat, which I just want to quickly bring up. T-Man Cash says, love the Battletech reference. And I agree with you, Vince. Actually, until you've explained to me the Battletech bit, I didn't really realize what I loved so much. I've explained it before a lot of times that was my favorite bit about the Horus Heresy, that, like, I thought it was a piece of genius kind of, like, maneuvering by Alan and the kind of construction there. But now I'm actually understanding it. I'm like, yes, playing in time zones / war zones would be, like, fascinating. And I think there's some really interesting stuff that we can relate to this in Age of Sigmar as well. But Forgive says the problem is that they fragmentize the player base too much. Actually, like, so, like, it depends, like, this is the kind of, like, interesting fact, right? Like, a lot of, like, obviously, like you said, I talk a lot about competitive play, whether it be 40K or be Age of Sigmar, whatever the situation. But the thing that I love about it, and the thing that I think makes Warhammer unique, is that it is always narratively focused, right? If you produce X army, like, it's a narratively led competitive army. And I think that's a really thing. And I don't think having the ability for us to play, like, if I was running a tournament, let's say, and we were going to, let's do an Age of Sigmar one, and let's say we were going to do one set in the Realmgate Wars. Yeah, so there was a Realmgate on every table. Like, it was in the match play rules. There was a Realmgate on every table, two on every table. And they had the old Realmgate rules where you could just put a unit in it and teleport it through, whatever the situation. Then you'd be like, okay, so just the normal battle plans from the GHB, whatever. But we're in the Realmgate War, so there's always going to be two Realmgates on the table. As simple as that, to change stuff around, changes the meta, changes the game, makes it really fascinating. And yeah, maybe it fragments the collective, but it makes something interesting for other people. And I think, like, it doesn't have to be quite as homogenous. Like, I like the I like what Owen has done, where, like, the he took some stuff out. You know, so there was the fat middle, so some of the competitive armies weren't there. I think that's fun. I like the ban phase from the Super Series. I think that's useful as well. I think being able to, like, to mess about with the game is really interesting, and I love what you're saying with the war zones. I think that is really exciting, and you could apply so well to Age of Sigmar. It's actually what they did really badly. Actually, thinking about it now, they've done that really badly with the realms. Like, they did a really bad job with that on the realms, and they could have made that far more interesting, right? Like,
Yeah, I agree. And talking about fragmenting the player base, I don't think it does if you take the right hand with this. Because, again, you want to just play a game. Cool, just play a game. You can ignore all this crap, right? You don't need to set it during any... Like, the game is not required to be set in Epoch, right? But it gives you the out to do that, to tell big stories, right? And my point is, you can even do a miniatures game like this. Like, it's, you know, like, that's why I use the Battletech example, because it is a miniatures game, right? And there are compensation factors built into the construction of the competitive scene for doing this, right? So, like, you can build to this. Yes, it would be, and somebody, the issue is you need GW to support all those different eras, and they can hardly support 30K. Like, I agree. This would be a change of how they had to think about their narrative and their game and the way that they structure it, right? But it would be so compelling overall to, like, explore these eras, to have things tied to these eras, and to be able to, by things, I mean, rules, excuse me, rules, went down the wrong pipe. Miniatures, whatever. Mm-hmm. Right? And again, they keep carrying forward. And you don't need to even tie that much miniatures to it. Like, I accept that you're not going to produce a whole range of miniatures for every single era. That's not what I'm implying. Most of the stuff would be carryover. Most of it is just big narrative moves you're making and then rules you write in a book that if you want to play in this era, this is your composition of your forces.
Yes, of course. Right? Yeah, yeah.
That's it. That's most of the work. Right?
Yeah.
It's like we can just keep using the same minis and they can just be playing in different eras. The remnants of this force, playing this force at its height. Right? Like you mentioned, the Beast Arises. Like, imagine the orc supplement that you could have for playing at that point when the orcs are just, like, at their penultimate. They're big. They're juiced. They're ready. Right? They are on the wall. That's just composition rules to support that. You use the same orcs. We don't need new orcs. I mean, we do. Like, that's a different discussion. But, like, my point is you wouldn't have to have a whole new range just to support that Beast Arises period.
No, you don't. No, you can do the same, but you could add like extra.
Sure, put out a cool unit.
Yeah, and someone was saying in the chat, A Song of Ice and Fire, and also Star Wars Legion are also doing this right now as well. You can play in different time periods, like in different situations, which does make sense that the game, or more importantly, the settings can be timeline agnostic. Like you get to choose when the timeline occurs. I mean, we do that already, right, to a degree, and in fact, Age of Sigmar. Like, and the rules guys, but, like, whoever created the Age of Sigmar world or first conceptualized it at least understood that, like, a little bit. Like, in 8th edition, when you had, like, some empire fighting against some Lustrians, you were like, like, in a sandy tabletop, you were like, what is going on? Why are you all here? Like, that doesn't make, like, doesn't make tons of sense. Whereas, like, in Age of Sigmar, anyone can really be anywhere at any time, like, battling without anything. So you end up with... they've already set it up so that they can create that better. So I think that's a fascinating time. But then I still feel they need some linchpins, which is why I enjoy the stuff with the cities that we see happening at the minute, where, like, there are places, and I can understand where the place and where the thing is happening. I think that's really important as well. But loads. Yeah, this is... wait, what's the other period in A Song of Ice and Fire? There is another one. Well, that's what the guys in the chat were saying anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars is the easy example, right? Because you have, like, and this is where they've already done this, and we know that this is the case, because, like, obviously Star Wars, and, you know, I'm not, but this isn't a discussion on the quality of the movies, but there's clearly different eras to Star Wars where we can set stories in, right, and drill in. Like, I think most people tended to like Rogue One. I personally think it was a terrible movie, but whatever you like. But people loved that little drilled-in story happening in the sort of pre-rebellion period, right? Or the Mandalorian or whatever, right? Like, and then you can go all the way back and do, like, the KOTOR period, right? The Knights of the Old Republic and all this. And that's where, you know, the High Republic. Like, we know that Republic falls. It fails. It gets destroyed. It gets replaced. Like, that's it.
If anything, there's some majesty that you get to, like, when you get the true believers, like, you're able to add some sort of, like, You get to add in the horror of, like, their, like, faith being ultimately, like, you know, like, they're a doomed fanatic, and we know, but they don't know. You get to watch that vehicle occur, which I think is super.
Yes, and there's something so compelling about that. I totally agree. I can see that. I'm sorry, Dreadwoods. I'm sorry I lost you with my Rogue One thing. I'll make it worse. The Vader scene at the end is the worst scene in the movie.
Because you ask anyone what's good about the movie, they say, have you seen the Vader scene? It's like, well, then that's good. And that's unrelated to the movie.
Correct.
So you didn't like the movie. You liked one scene. So they could have just done a 2-minute short and everyone would have been happy.
Sure. Yes. And, like, don't get me wrong, I love seeing Vader rip into people because Vader is super cool. And again, he's one of those badasses that I love watching work. Like, let's be honest, right? That is, like, watching Vader give the you done effed up face and then messing some dudes up is good. But at any rate, like, again, as a 2-minute short on its own, it's fun. As a scene in a movie, it's bad.
So,
at any rate,
if I can bring this back to Age of Sigmar.
Yeah.
Would you like to see going forward, like, obviously Age of Sigmar 3 on the horizon and all those other things, would you like to see these time zones / kind of like areas be something that gets integrated into the game at wholesale? Do you think it would work in match play? Do you think that would be like a fun addendum?
What excites me is that they seem to already have cottoned to this a little in AOS, mm-hmm. right? Because we destroyed a City of Sigmar. Like, that's a big change to the world. But we said, you can still use those rules, right? Anvil Guard is gone. That no longer exists. But you can still play Anvil Guard. You're just the partisans, or you're playing in a different time period, right? Like, that's specifically what they said. They're almost there. The penny has almost dropped, right? Mm-hmm. And yes, they're close. Yes, I absolutely want to see this, right? I want to see them realize that they can make big moves in this Broken Realms story, right? That they can, like, we can shatter realms, destroy gods, topple kingdoms, right? Like, we can have big, crazy things happen and open new eras, new ages, new epochs, whatever of the game, right? And then, yes, what I would love to see, Rob, is an expansion of, like, going and exploring rules for playing in the Age of Myth, or, you know, or in these various ages that they open up in the future. And the, like, I can see Autumn is really about, Anvil Guard exists, there's a resistance army trying to take it back. Yeah, see? See? Now, how bad would he have felt, he or she, I don't know your name, from that, at any rate, would have felt if they had just said, like, Anvil Guard's no longer a thing, you can't play it anymore. That would have been terrible.
It would have been terrible, but no, you're right. And also,
they did it the right way.
Yeah, yeah. You give her that narrative hook, like we talked about at the start with Phil and his team, including all those narrative hooks inside of the game. In the narrative, you end up with these things. When you do have these, like, what I like is that, like, in the future, we're going to end up with some history. Is a good example. It's kind of like, it's where I feel that they really, really missed the trick with the Sylvaneth book, because I'm a big Sylvaneth fan. Big Sylvaneth fan. So one of the things that excited me most was the kind of like the internal war. It's not, but it is, between Draika, obviously, and Alariel. Draika had to like take charge. She saw Alariel like run away. She saw this destruction. She was filled with this hatred. Like, and there's almost that civil war between the two. I would even like to see that expanded out so they do separate out. I think that that would be really awesome. And you have these kind of like malevolent tree spirits versus these kind of like meant to be good tree spirits, effectively. Right. And I think that would be really fun. But with the Sylvaneth book, what they then didn't do with the new rules, and they didn't do with the book as a whole, was really expand on that. In fact, actually, it was quite a bland delivery on what was some really great setup inside that book, which is like a hope that I have for the future, where they're going to like the, because the sub-factions bit is brilliant, because if you like Seraphon, you actually can choose which sub-faction you prefer a little bit more, and which timeline you, or which sort of like, are they all actually like on Earth, or are they still space, but like demons?
Yeah.
Like, you know, they've already given themselves those tools for us to be more creative with it. We now just need the setting to put it into, which I think would be great. And I love the proposition, I think, is the point.
Let me say a couple things here real quick. I want to hit a couple comments rapid fire. Hawkdos asked the question, doesn't knowing the ending diminish the story? I argue no. These aren't mysteries, right? Like, again, people love the Civil War. People love World War II. Saving Private Ryan was a pretty big, important story that people really loved that movie. It won all the awards. It made millions and billions and billions of dollars, right? And we know the ending of World War II, but we don't know the ending of this character, of this person we care about, right? Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, the story, the setting, these big moves, they aren't people that have pathos that we care about. What we care about is the people that set in this world, and we want to know what they do, where they go, what they feel. That's what matters, right? It's why the people who came out and wanted to cancel me because I dislike Rogue One, it's why they loved Rogue One. They knew what the end of that was. They knew the end of the story. When you sat down in the theater, you knew what the end of that movie was, but it didn't matter because you cared about those characters. Right. If that movie hit for you, it's because you liked those characters. So, and again, people love the Civil War and will read endless stories about generals and soldiers and people in the Civil War or whatever. Pick your war. Right. So, no, I don't think it matters at all. Somebody said, do you know about the White Oak versus Greywater Fastness? I think it's actually Pale Oak is his name, not White Oak. But yes, I do know. I ran a Soulbound marathon actually in Greywater Fastness, where Pale Oak was a pretty important featured character. I like Pale Oak. I think him and all of his dudes out there are really interesting and cool. And, you know, I think that to me, it's such an easy change in how you make this. And it would allow us to, like, it would allow them to write cool books and novels set in these different eras, which is great. And it would allow us to experience different eras and time periods, right, of, like, what these forces felt like at different times. You can use this unit, you can't use these units. Your army can have more of this, less of that, whatever, right? You can play with it. You have this extra special rule, you don't have this rule.
Yeah.
Easy, right? And again, how do you balance that competitively? Quite easily, because either A, you go, this tournament is set in this time period and everybody's using these rules. Done, right?
Yeah, and we're already used to that. Like, this tournament is set in this realm. Like,
right,
cool.
Right.
Like, we're already used to that. Like, and from, like, someone made a point in the chat earlier, I think it was Forgive, like, how do you balance, like how do you take all of the data that is available to make better kind of points adjustments? I mean, there's a couple of points to make. They're number one games, which I don't do a good job of that at all anyway, so kind of side note there. Like, I think just make a better development team and then be able to understand that. That's all I would say. You can just throw money at the problem, but they won't. So they're not going to do it anyway. So I would prefer a richer gaming experience out there in the world. I think that's more fun for me, the people I know, and hopefully the audience, than I ever would expressing, like, holding back from that because fear Games Workshop won't do a job that they're already not doing, if that makes sense. So
right.
A little side note on that, yeah.
And or two, by the way, the other option is you can just say, this tournament does not use epoch rules or era rules or age rules or whatever we call them, right? And that's it. And then you play everybody's the vanilla version of the army. And look how simple that was, right? But what it gives people is it frees them from the shackles of needing to be tied to an ever-present status quo where every army always exists and is perfect and is viable and is whatever, right? And instead says, let's tell a really compelling story here, right? And let's do something interesting and have moves that get people hooked, that, like, drive the hooks in. And then we can eliminate that cognitive dissonance. Like, you want the tyrannids to eat everybody? Guess what? That could happen.
And you can,
right?
I mean, and you can even man in the high tower it. You can just go alternate reality, like,
sure,
absolutely, like all of the Marvel comics, or like any of that, like, if you want to, like, and that's super fun because you can have whole teams working on that. And I honestly think that you drive more sales by producing that. And also, and this is really important, your settings idea and everything else is really, really, really important because it does what Games Workshop want the most. It will sell more books, which is what they truly care about at this stage. It's more books for them to release, for us to buy, which they love. Super excited. Like, I'm pretty certain at this stage Games Workshop have diversified their stock portfolio and have actually bought into bookends and or bookshelves.
Yes.
More to be said on that another time, but yeah.
Yeah,
they love books, right?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. It would do that. It would 100% do that, right? Like, it gives them an infinite thing to mine that people can buy and be like, whoa, what's going on here, right? Like, okay, I know ultimately the Tyranids win, but I need to know how this happened or whatever, right? I know ultimately that Sigmar gets destroyed and killed, right? Like, that we can turn this over to AOS. Like, yeah. I know ultimately that, like, that Marathi battles Sigmar and kills him. Holy crap. That's a huge deal, right? And now the Stormcast are left without their god. And the greatest god to oppose chaos has fallen, right? What are the implications of that? And then we can explore forward from there.
Yeah,
right.
I mean,
do we get a new Sigmar? Does a new hero rise?
Yeah. What if Sigmar just absolutely, like, destroys Nurgle, like, gets into the garden,
yes,
cleanses it? Yeah.
Yes.
Like, how does that, like, the chaos imbalance? Yeah, absolutely.
Like, there's so much interesting stuff you could do with it, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, like, the entirety of Age of Sigmar, Slaanesh has been in a prison. Yeah. I would point that out, right?
Yeah.
And so there's no Slaanesh god taking an active hand in the world. And yet we still all got to play Slaanesh armies and do cool stuff. And it actually informed a really interesting way the Slaanesh book came out. Like, we could talk about why the Slaanesh book was bad, but narratively, the concept of, like, the invaders, the seekers, and the pretenders as the sort of narratively driven way to divide the army was super cool,
mm-hmm,
right? Because the book and the way you played the army was a response to the narrative,
yes,
to Slaanesh being in prison.
I think that's one of the things about the letdowns of the IDK book, is because which they've done better jobs on in different books, depending on the book. They've done some great jobs. The narrative for the Moor Tribes book, obviously, is great for like differentiating between the different tribes. Like they're a bit, I don't know how to describe them, but they're a bit much sometimes. But it's cool. I like it. I think with the IDK though, they're all some enclave somewhere that has some specialization. But it just feels like a meh. Like it doesn't really have. They don't have any identity or any substance. Which I know this is going to sound weird, but maybe is why we generally deal with it as like a bland book and maybe even a bland army anyway, when there is genuinely some pretty exciting narrative, I think, that they could have. I like the idea of there being like an old ancient turtle that like they learn things from, like in one of the sub factions, something, right? And they just don't. So I think that there's a lot of, it's really exciting. I'm actually sat here like super pumped now, like really excited about like what it could all be. You know, and I'm not gonna like intersperse it with like, it probably won't, like, that's not the point. I'm excited. And if not, one of the things that's come up recently, or not actually recently, again, since Age of Sigmar's inception, Vince, I love that you've been on this journey with us all from the beginning, and I've been really happy to be a part of it since the beginning as well, is that we've had so many side project battle tomes / other stuff by the community. Yeah. As yeah. well. I actually think that that's a really exciting, another show I'd love to do with you another time is talk about that more. But I think that's another fun little inclusion as well. I've seen Beast of Chaos Battletome before there even was one. I know Darren's currently working on a Halfling one, which is hilarious. Like a whole thing, whole Battletome, like 3D sculpts are being made, the whole business. Like I think that's fun. We had a Legions and not Legions and the Gash one. We had a Tomb Kings one, as you know.
Yes, Tyler Mengel,
Tyler Mengel did a Tomb Kings one, and that's awesome, right? Like, I think, like, there's the community with Age of Sigmar. Age of Sigmar feels a little bit more community-owned than maybe 40K does sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is there is a lot of potential here if we break out of this need for sort of, like, and it feels like this is where we're going with AOS, and that's why I'm so excited about it, mm-hmm. is because it feels like they've cottoned to the fact that they can make big moves in the story.
Yeah.
And they can have big changes, and they can do crazy stuff that that completely flips the way we think of the world, right? And the place we exist in, without it being bad, right? That they can facilitate that through narrative, rules, miniatures, whatever, right? That they can introduce this stuff, and I want to see them keep doing so. My ask would be, go farther, right? Like, push harder. You're doing the right thing. Keep going. Like, let's throw this throttle all the way down, right? And again, it doesn't have to happen fast. I'm just asking for it to be big when it hits.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think I'm with you. I'm excited about the Techlist book. I'm excited about everything that we're going to see in the future. We should come back to this another day. This has been really, really fun, as always. And I think we're all on the same page. Well, nice for you and me to be on the same page about stuff for a day.
It's a weird day.
You got any plans this week before we head out? Got anything exciting on you're painting? What are you painting up at the minute?
Oh gosh, yeah, we didn't do any stonks today, by the way.
Oh no, actually, yeah. Sorry, can I ask you your two stonks? That's a great way to end the show. Like, I want to know your buy and sell.
All right, so AOS stonks, right? What's really good right now, and what's really bad? What are we gonna short on? Mm-hmm. Okay, so what do I think is going to get? So my short is on Blight Kings. Okay,
you think they're going up points?
Yes, I do. I absolutely do. Because Magikin of Nurgle are going to be in the next Techlist book. There's no way we're going to keep the 21 wounds for 140 points Blight King spam crap in an area where we're probably getting some attention to Nurgle being paid. So yes, they will go up points. I'm short selling on Blight Kings.
Wow. Okay? So you Blight Kings. That's what we're hearing. Obviously none of us are financial advisors. Important point to make. Okay, interesting. I completely see that. I like a lot of them are out there in the market as well. But people are still wanting to buy them. We'll see. We'll see. It's a good one. What are you buying, though? Like, what do you think is underrated and we're getting in?
Okay, so it's already a highly rated stock, but somehow it's going to go even higher until it's just overinflated, and that's LRL. And let me say why I think this. LRL is a tier one book right now with, like, seven war scrolls, okay? It is one of the most complex armies they've ever made. I'm going to do a show sometime in the future about mental complexity in armies and kind of rank all the armies by mental complexity. In other words, how much mental baggage do you need to even carry in your brain to play an army? And Lumineth is way up there. That book is overtuned and overdesigned. I mean, I love it because it's like internal balance wise, it's off the charts quality. It won't be now, but we're about to get 12 probably more war scrolls for Lumineth in the next Broken Realms book. Do you really think a already tier one army on seven war scrolls, okay? Now I'm going to add 12 more into the mix with new battalions, new abilities in a synergistic nonsense army like that, right? With like 1,000 special rule interactions. Like, you saw Benjamin Sava's like spell list of plotting out his spells and his exact cast order, okay? The skill ceiling on Lumineth is, it's above the edge of my screen. It's so high, okay? Now, throw 12 more units and new abilities and synergies and sub-factions and whatever else we're going to get into that mix. That army is going to go bent hard. Like, that is my bet. They are going to go from tier one good to S like that. Okay. It's hard. Like, unless the release is such a... of nothing, right? Like, to where every unit they release is just bad and has no real role. Very hard to imagine with this kind of size.
Very hard to imagine. Yeah.
Right. There's no way that that army doesn't skyrocket in quality. If you think LRL are good now, wait for the nightmare that is about to come. That is what I will say. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I'm not sure there's loads out there in the marketplace. There's not, like, lots of people. I mean, there might be a bunch of people who bought the Lumineth Realm Lords at the box launch. And
yeah, that original box are still sitting on it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, now's the time, because that army is going to be... Enjoy and paint it fast, because it'll be bent for, like, 6 months to a year, and then they'll have to be like, whoa, we've done messed up. And then points will shoot up.
All 3 years. Like, that's the range. Yeah.
Could be. You might get lucky. But admittedly, that is the rare exception. Most of the time, these things do get addressed. So,
yeah, okay, big stonks.
You can't ride Vanguard Wing forever, but you can get a good 6 months out of it.
It's true. Some big stonks in the chat. A load of people loving that. I'm so happy you're part of the stonks market.
Absolutely. I'm in the stonks.
It's such a fun little side project, hearing what everyone's stuff is. Okay. All right. Sweet. Appreciate that, Vince. And appreciate you coming on the show as well so early. It's nothing but it's a delight to have you in the community and to be able to talk to you at all. So thanks for everything that you do for the community, because you do also some brilliant stuff. Your show this Wednesday is about MPE, right? You've done your survey.
Yes.
So I'm very much looking forward to that. That's going to be...
Oh, you will be surprised, Rob. I am going to have some data points in there that you will be very interested in. It has to do with there is some fascinating stuff that came out of the survey. From competitive armies to what people find as negative. Yeah, I am really, really excited about this one. This is one of the most illuminating surveys we've done. So.
Okay. Yeah, sweet. All right. Very, very excited. All right. So I'm looking forward to Wednesday. So thank you for everything you do from me and everyone in the community as well. I hope you have a great week. Twitch chat, can I just say thanks everyone for joining us live today. You're all great. Tomorrow's going to be a fun show. So I'll be live tomorrow, obviously, like I always am. I think on Sunday, me and Dayton are talking about not Iron Golems specifically, but we're talking about the Idolaters, and we're going to do a bit of a show on that. That'll be fun, and seeing if anyone wants to buy loads of Iron Golems, and the answer is don't. I feel that's a huge mistake, but it's a currently trending stonk that I think is definitely a bubble that'll explode very quickly. but thanks everyone for joining us live. You're all brilliant. Thanks for being here. We'll see you soon. See you tomorrow, and have a great day.